You're listening to the Electronic Media Collective Podcast Network. Yeah, it's a mouthful. For more great shows, like the one you're about to enjoy, visit electronicmediacollective.com. And now, our feature presentation.
Yet again, another shitty horror film that's not even horror. We're talking about Things Heard and Seen, a Netflix original release. I am not excited. Eric, how the hell are you doing?
I'm curious to dig into this. After I watched this movie, I went online and everybody was shitting on this movie. And I don't understand why. It seemed like a lot of the gripes that I got from the questions in this was questions that they were asking that were answered in the movie. So I'm curious to talk about this with you today, Jordan. I'm not going to give this glowing reviews, but I will say that having go into this completely blind, I thought this was going to be kind of a ghost story, but instead I got something else.
Yeah, no, this is just like the film we watched last year, 1922. It's you go into this thinking this is going to be this awesome, scary. If you watch the trailers, you're like, oh, this is going to be an awesome, scary ghost story, and that's not it at all. So my biggest gripe with this movie, Eric, is that there's no reason to have ghost in it whatsoever.
Okay.
None. I mean, the ghosts do nothing. Husband does not get possessed to do the things that he does. No reason why he does the way he does from a ghost standpoint. There's no shining here. And okay. And then the second issue is that when things eventually happen at the end, there's no reasons for the ghost to be there. They do nothing. Actually, the one ghost does nothing. Just have this. Don't be. And also, the name, Things Heard and Seen. Change the name, redo the film, get the ghost stuff out, and you got a very good drama thriller film. You got Rebecca, if anybody knows that, from Alfred Hitchcock. You got that kind of movie, which people have compared this, I've seen online, to Rebecca and also Robert Zemeckis' What Lies Beneath, which I totally agree with. What Lies Beneath is terrible.
Okay. There was a lot of comparisons to What Lies Beneath.
Right. I mean, do you get it so far? Because I wanted to spoil
it. I understand it completely. And your complaints are not unlike those that were said online. A lot of people said that this, I'm reading a lot, some people said to be using this one a lot. This movie has no guts or glory. This movie has no big move. It doesn't know what it wants to be. I disagree. I think that it really sticks to its theme pretty well in this. I understand the complaint about the ghosts. Because, again, I thought we were going into this movie thinking it was going to be a ghost story. It ends up being more of like a Talented Mr. Ripley that was said by Sarah. And it was a great comparison, you know, this kind of identity thing as well, too. But I have to say that there is a theme in this whole movie. It's not done well, I'll give you that for sure. But the character Floyd explained it a lot more, too. When they first hired the main guy, the husband, James Norton's, George Clare, here we go. When they first hired him in, it was because of his art, right? Of the art degree or his dissertation on art theory.
Right.
Correct. And the first time, he meets Floyd, the dean, I guess, of whatever college he's recruited to, he gives him a book that plainly is your foreshadowing, your Chekhov's book, I guess, if you want to say it, to kind of in that part, that is a reoccurring theme about how spirits are paired with their real counterparts. You know, that there is a link between the two, and this is expressed more so in the art interpretation that they have in the movie. He teaches it. George Clare teaches it, for example. And for that to be represented in the movie, I think, is part of the theme. I get it. I would say that instead of comparing it more to like What Lies Beneath, which again, I can totally see, this almost felt a little bit more, even with the seance, like a more of like a, what the hell is that movie? Something in Connecticut, Haunting in Connecticut.
Haunting in Connecticut, yeah.
You know, kind of in that part almost, you know, but there were some questionable things in this movie. That's what I just wanted to say, is that there, and for everybody who was shitting on this thing too, and comparing it to whatever bad movie they wanted to compare it to. I think that they just missed the overall theme of this. Again, I'm not trying to say that this theme is great or new or revolutionary, but it just seemed like these complaints were falling short.
I see. Now, that's where I totally disagree with you on. I don't think they have a theme in this. I think everything is douchebaggery put into our face. Hey, this is foreshadowing. Don't like it. And you say that there is ghosts going with their human or alive counterparts. That's only one that we see.
We get the one main haunting of a ghost. But for everyone, like, we're just going to, I mean, nothing new to the show here. We just go in spoilers heavy and talk about the after effect of a movie, the reaction, right? So our two main characters, the newly married couple, George and Catherine with their daughter, Franny, have an opportunity, get a job at a new college, move to upstate New York, to the farmhouse. It is your typical build.
And very typical.
Everything about it for the first half an hour, I would say, was very much your typical build. We went to the new house. Creepy things happen. Wife, the weak wife, as usually put in this movie, and the narcissistic husband, kind of in his own world type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the very naive child who's just, you know, easily scared and is there to add for creepy effect. No really use for her otherwise.
Right.
You know, oh, well, to express the troubles in marriages as well, too. But this is where we get almost like the mix of Revolutionary Road type, where it's a lot of husband and wife confrontation with it, too. Again, I see that the theme in this is that the house has history. I think it's kind of weird that the farmhand characters stayed around and were relevant in this movie, Eddie and Cole. The Vales.
Come on, man. Let's talk about that real quick because we say we're going to spoil the shit out of it. Okay, so let's get into the problems if you don't mind. I mean, because you're saying that and you just brought those guys up, and that's one of my biggest problems with
this. Yeah, because this is our first introduction. We get introduced to these characters. And
we get it, yeah.
These are they almost are brought in with a dark light, you know, which 100%. They're not. They're good characters, but you can instantly know that, oh, these guys came with the house. There's a history. Like, that's part of the formula that we get in the first half an hour. Just like, oh, here are the locals, here are the townies that know the secret, you know, and that the wife doesn't. Everyone's in on it except her, you know.
Right.
We're getting
because the husband knows, too. He said that, too, because the husband, we find out in this first act, I would argue, that the husband even knew the history of the house. And it's like, okay. So the history of the house, let's talk about that, is that the couple before there, the husband went nuts and killed his wife with an axe. And their children are the farmhands.
He killed his wife through asphyxiation.
I'm sorry, not an axe. Yes, you're right. Yes, you're right. You're right. You're right. But he killed her, and the children are the farmhands. Now, it's like, come on, really? I mean, like,
Well, there's a history of it, too, because even before that mystery is, which again, we have like a mystery on a mystery here, because that is its own separate thing. As Catherine, Amanda Seyfried's character, is going through the house, she gets clues of the first inhabitants, the first damned people to be in that house, which I don't think they explored enough of.
No.
In fact, that's another theme in this movie, is not exploring enough of something that's introduced. I think there's a lot of stuff that they leave out, and that's probably more for the book crowd. I understand that this is based on the novel All Things Cease to Appear.
Right, which I was told that this actually doesn't do 100% justice to it. But what is it? Okay, so what happens is that Catherine finds this Bible, and it has the bookmark in it, and she sees all these names of born and death, and it says damned. Now, I didn't read
they were
the
all
Bible.
The Smith family.
Right, but were they all male or were they all female?
I think it was just kind of a mix of family tree of such. I didn't observe it either.
Because at the very, very end of the movie, very, very end, a character says, finally, the women of the house are going to get their justice.
Yeah.
So it makes me want to go back. And makes me want to look at that Bible, because if it's all women that have been in this house since its construction, until now have all the husbands, a la Jack Nicholson, went crazy and killed the wife somehow?
That's where I was unclear about, because the evil ghost, they talk about spirits a lot in this movie about halfway through, and this is where it kind of turns. Right. Kind of the climax of the spirit part, and then the introduction to the different part of this movie, the second half of it, where they talk about that the original haunting in this house that we thought was, well, our typical ghost movie, ends up being a friendly ghost, not a Casper type, but a guardian angel type. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, right.
But again, there have been multiple tragedies in this house. And so we get the introduction to her, the more, I guess, recent of the murders, right? She's the Vale valet, or, right, the two boys, their mother, right? That's who the guardian angel is.
Right.
Yeah, and I understand that. But then, if there's other spirits in the house, they weren't clear. Maybe I missed it. Maybe they did say it and I completely missed it. I don't know if it was the Smiths, like if it was the evil ghost was the husband, or if it was the wife. If it was the husband, then why is the wife's name crossed out and damned in the book? I'm unsure.
So, right. See, a lot of this is unsure because, like you said, just like you said in the beginning of the show here, is that the ghosts had to find their human counterparts. Well, we didn't see anything. At the end, we see no other ghosts, no other, aspirations, whatever. Like, we don't...
Spirits, yes.
Spirits. We just see her. Now, the reason why I get so frustrated and why I call this movie bullshit is that there is actually no reason, there's no character reason for the husband to make the turn that he makes. He makes bad choices, which we'll discuss here soon, but there's no reason for the husband to make the drastic choices that he makes.
Ah, but there is, Jordan.
Is there? Because he's not possessed. You know, we don't see another spirit. We don't see anybody else but Ella. So what is the actual reason for him to go crazy?
Glad you asked this, because this will hopefully answer a lot of these questions. People were asking the exact same question.
Okay.
Again, we have the theme, and Dr. Floyd, his superior, had said that good spirits are attracted to good people. There is a counterpart, a pairing there, and bad people attract bad spirits or evil spirits. Right. So we would have no reason to think that our George Clare character here is a bad guy. He's given nothing. You know, there's bad marriages. Of course there are, and they say it later on in the movie. And they probably have back and forths because she has an eating problem, too. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, too. And there are things there. But we learn more and more and more that this guy has more than just a little secret, just a little affair happening on the side. There's something much deeper happening here, too. And we get it in a few big reveals. The big reveal that I got it in is when they were at Thanksgiving. And they talked about his cousin and about what a gifted painter he was, and what kind of watercolors did he do? And they described the exact paintings that he was hanging on his shelf. So where we get the comparison for Talented Mr. Ripley is that it seems that George Clare, at least from my interpretation of the movie, killed his cousin on a sailboat the same way that he killed Floyd, and took his identity, took his art credentials, and used it to gain notoriety and become an art theorist.
Did they say that the cousin died in a sailing accident?
He did. George Clare told or confessed this to Floyd on their first sail trip when he was reminiscing about his cousin, or reminiscing about his sailing days, as he says, on the Lost Horizon, his sailboat, his cousin's sailboat. He said first that he inherited the sailboat, and then talked about how his cousin died unexpectedly, and how sophisticated that he was, almost talking as if he, like, admired him, you know, envied him in a way.
Right. Okay, so that's good. I did not know that. Part of it is because I wake up early in the morning, like always, and today is Memorial Day, people, behind the scenes. And I saw this movie at 5:45 in the morning in my garage with a cup of coffee. So I saw this today this early. So I guess I didn't see that. That's good. That's subtle. I like subtle things like that.
Yeah.
But again, what just takes me out of it, Eric, is the goddamn ghost stuff.
Sure.
Don't have it, because it takes me out. Because what you just told me is really good, really clever. They're not coming out and just saying, hey, this guy escaped a mental hospital. He's a crazy guy, right? You don't see that. You're getting told these little clues, and that's really good. But Jesus, the ghost stuff pissed me off.
I can understand that. I really can, because, again, like, why it worked for me, or at least not worked, but didn't bother me as much as maybe the most, is because going into this completely blind, I, through trailer and through poster, you know, and not doing so much into it, the benefit of not watching trailers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Thinking for the first half an hour, the first hour, actually, that this was a ghost movie.
Right.
And that's, I didn't know where it was going, because some of the creepy stuff was fun. It was great. I do like a good ghost story. I really do. And so a lot of the creeps that they had and the jumps that they had in the movie were fine. They weren't anything new. They were the typical bump in the night type of thing, you know, electricity this and the corner ghost there. And, you know, I understand that. But again, I enjoy that type of thing. But that was when the switch hit a bit more, because it's just like, oh, wait a minute. But you're right, because that second act, that part of that movie, completely overshadows anything that happened before.
Absolutely. And it just takes you out of it. It's like they don't know what the movie they're in. Also, like, the movie doesn't do good with George, because right off the bat, like in the first act, he's already getting googly eyes with Willis, who's a female student who was also the sister of one of the farmhands. Right? Is she a sister?
I thought they were friends.
Oh, they're friends. Okay. Because, all right.
Question mark, maybe?
Right. Lovers as well. But, you know, he's having an affair. And, of course, we get the gratuitous wife walks in on husband jerking in the shower and just walks away. I thought that was stupid. I brought it up because I just thought that was just unnecessary, that needed to be cut.
That seems kind of – I think – yeah, that was, I agree with that, Jordan. It was trying to make a separation between the two, I think, you know, but that their marriage was
– No, that's something I don't see. I just – this is the scene I want to lay out what I saw. And the reason why I wanted to spell this out, because I actually – told myself I wanted to talk about this because this really bothered me. And it's not the act of him masturbating. It's just the cut, just filmmaking style, okay? He's at the library. He runs into a female student who is clearly giving him googly eyes. He is definitely saying, you know, hey, you know, what's up? How you doing? There's going to be something happening. There's some flirtation. The camera really, really lingers on Willis and his eyes and all that stuff. And then the next scene, cut, next scene is Catherine walking upstairs to his back turned to her. He's in the shower jerking it. And then she just goes, oh, and walks away. It's like, why? What was the point of that? That was ridiculous. That was just a bad directing choice. And that's another reason why I don't like this movie. It's just the directing choices. Hey, we got to get a scene of a guy jerking it, because that is telling the audience that he's going to be
He's frustrated.
He's going to cheat. Dude masturbates all the time and he's married. Doesn't mean he's frustrated. You know, dude just needs to work one out once in a while. You know,
well,
what the hell?
Read the context, Jordan.
I know, but it's like, there's just no reason for the scene. So there's that. There's no reason for a lot of scenes. We get a seance, you know, and it's like, who's the old guy? You have Justine. But then you have an old guy.
You're talking about Floyd, the guy.
Floyd.
Yeah,
Floyd.
Yeah. Right. The dean superior, whatever you want to call him.
Loves to do a seance. It's like, oh my God.
They played F. Murray Abram, by the way.
I walked out of that and poured myself another coffee at that point in time. And I came back after the seance. I was like, what's going on? This is ridiculous. And, you know, get the radio playing and it doesn't turn off and he has to destroy it. I'm like, oh, ghost stuff, you know. And then, you know, and then also now we know pretty much at the end of the first act is Catherine takes George takes Franny, the kid, to her parents' house in Connecticut, right? Because, okay, now the kid's gone, so now all bets are off, right? So
yeah.
Now she's going to get gone. But, no.
I had to think about this whole movie after I saw it, and I heard, again, a lot of these complaints, and I heard a few people talk well about this movie. And again, to their own right, everybody is able to, you know, watch a movie and interpret their own reaction to it, of course. I guess I think taking that information in in comparing it to what we had watched, I think the thing was is that there was just either too much of this movie or it was maybe too simple in its storytelling and didn't know what it wanted to be. We'd keep on going back to this where it was two separate movies, but both of them were told in simple terms. And everything right. seemed to just be so conveniently there.
Right. Like that, Karen. I mean, right. Justine. I'm sorry, not Karen. Justine. But her name's Karen.
Yeah, she plays the Karen of the movie, Justine, who is the wife of Bram, a tennis partner that George Clare plays with. Independent couple, the kind of the do-gooders, you know, if you want to say the foil to a lot of the plans later on, the skeptics, the ones who kind of get a read and they're just like, yeah, or Justine's character at least is just like, yeah, listen, George, I don't like your vibe, man. I think after a bad night at the party one time, she really changed her tone. She's like, no, something's wrong with this guy, and she never let it go. And so that was convenient to erase the suspicion for it. It's convenient that Floyd was able to not only believe in seances and you know, had the spirituality of it, and so it was the same with his wife too, but also is able to perform them successfully in record time with a group of random other people who just can call through a portal, whatever the hell, have never done it in this house before, despite knowing kind of the history, even though they think they were asked to. But they're townies. They should know about this, you know? They're kind of close by. This, it seems like the legend of this house or this farm, didn't restrict itself from just being within the neighborhood. It seems like it spread a bit. The characters and them being there. Also, I mean, a lot of these characters were like set up to be there for George to kill, but other characters like were completely just nowhere to be. Like we are introduced to Bram, Justine's husband, and we get to see him in a few scenes, but then that's it. You're telling me that he, in his close relationship with George at the tennis club, or to his wife even, wouldn't hear or know about anything. This, why is he not a character in this?
Why is a lot of people not characters in this? And also, why are we getting Floyd as the old priest as a joke? Where's the young priest? They're going to do a seance. Jesus Christ. It's stupid.
I do find it kind of silly as well that as an educated man as Floyd is, kind of conveniently does this thing where he takes on a sailboat and he's like, oh yeah, come on in, and then proceeds on this sailboat to basically fire the dude on the boat, just them two.
Right. And that, but before we get into that, I'm talking about another thing that's really stupid, because you said things are just put in place. Like Justine overhears a conversation with George and his fucking advisor, you know, that he was hired without a recommendation letter. So like, oh, we gotta fire him. And what does Justine do? She Karens out, right? Floyd knows, and he's just like, hey, is this true? And he's like, yeah, no, maybe. And he's like, well, we're going to have to talk. And he's like, hey, it's the holidays. My family's in town. Can we just schedule until after the holidays? And Floyd said, yeah. And like you said, then after that, when we find out about the cousin stuff and everything, Floyd, an educated man, we see the camera has to really follow George here, because he has he's having his, you know, Anthony Perkins, Norman Bates moment here, where he's just like tweaking out, and he sees him on the boat, and I'm screaming at the screen. I'm like, don't let him on the boat. He's going to kill you.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh, you know, come on my sailboat. And then George, now again, I don't understand. Floyd is firing him, not because they know that he's still the identity of his cousin in his paintings. He's firing him because he didn't have a letter of recommendation.
He forged his superior, his letter of recommendation, whether it be his stationery or his signature, probably both, to be quite honest with you, and everything else, and wrote a fake letter of recommendation. And yeah, okay. I understand, like, that is a serious crime. That,
right.
And professors, especially in that industry, that's a lot. You mm-hmm. know, to be outed as a cheat like that is humiliating. It really is. And George almost got away with it. If it weren't for the conveniently placed Justine to go on that trip with him, You know, but again, like, this is where these little bits of suspicion drop and where the movie changes, because we get to find out that this George guy is not, you know, he's not just a bad guy. He's now got more to it, you know, right. that he's really deep and evil, and he's going to attract these evil spirits. But again, that's where it kind of gives me a taste and then just ends it, because it went from him being like this kind of nice guy who was like going through a rough marriage to being like, oh, okay, he's going on an affair, and now he's suddenly like this killer, a secret closeted killer that did one time maybe when he was 19, to now going on kind of a spree trying to kill his superior and his colleague in the same night. Like, that's a lot. And his wife. It, like, a lot is happening in one. You know, he went from a guy who's holding a secret to now this serial killer.
Right, to try to cover his tracks. Then also why this whole boat scene with Floyd, his wife is stooping the farmhand.
Yeah, that seemed kind of like an evil thing to do, right? You know, and
well, she looked pissed though. She was very pissed off. Like, I mean, like,
she had his mother's looks, wearing his ring and her clothes.
Oh yeah, dude, because she even said earlier in the middle way of the film, because we find out in the beginning of the film that she's bulimic, right? That's where I'm looking, right? Bulimic.
Yeah, yes.
And she's at the dinner table. That whole situation happens with, hey, the cousin thing. She goes into the bathroom and she's throwing up or trying to or whatever. He comes in and he like insults her. You know, he's like, we're doing this again. She's like, I'm throwing up our marriage. I'm just like, oh, that was a good line. That was a hell of a good line. So now she's distraught. She's destroyed in this handsome, you know, what's eating Gilbert Grape looking farmhand. Tell me he doesn't look like what's eating Gilbert Grape.
Yeah, he does look like, the Johnny Depp role?
Yeah, Gilbert, yeah. He looks like that. And she's just like, hey, I'm gonna steal your cigarette, and then after I steal your cigarette, I'm going to ride you like I did this horse earlier. And that's going to happen. So then scene cuts, and we go back to nighttime, and George is walking in the parking lot of the school sopping wet. So we all know. We're not stupid. You and I both.
Walking back from a crime, yeah.
Right. Why so? Now, let's talk about this real quick before we get into, you know, everything else. Why is he soaking wet? Is that just the director's being stupid and going, well, if we show the audience that he's sopping wet, then that means he definitely killed. Why? Couldn't he have just pushed Floyd over the water? I mean, like, I'm not asking to see the kill. I'm just saying, why is he soaking wet? Did he pretend to fall in? Floyd come to rescue him, and then he drowns Floyd. How did he do it? And that was kind of my question to you, is because why? Again, for the third time, why is he soaking wet? Besides directors being the way they are.
Again, this is another thing that, with all the complaints that are on here, I have to give it to you on this one. I think there could have been better ways to show suspicion or suspect in somebody than to correlate him going, one person going out on the boat and one person coming back all wet in the pitch of dark, which kind of seemed weird that, again, the conveniently placed Justine would be able to kind of see George, Claire, you know, why y'all wet type of thing, they can thus making it more suspect about what was going on. I think there could have been maybe something else there. Like, maybe they find something of George's on the boat. You know, like, that may have been something as well, too.
Yeah,
something, you know. But it was just kind of silly that they tell Floyd, tell George the next day that, oh, hey, Floyd's dead. It's like, oh, my God, that's horrible. Yeah, it sucks. Hey, do you want his job? You, the new guy? Do you, the new guy, want his job? We need somebody else. And he's like, oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah, sure. So that was convenient and useless as well, too. I thought that was just... There were parts in this movie, it was like a roller coaster. Parts in this movie that I thought worked and that it did really well. Honestly, I do believe that. But there are moments like that in other parts in this movie where it's just like, why? Why do we need to see this? Your jerk off scene, the her fucking the farm boy scene.
Right.
There's a lot of these
either.
Yeah, where she's like, I don't need to see the scene where Willis was being stubborn. And she's like, oh, well, we shouldn't be fucking. And then gets on her horse and rides away. Was that just so I could see a pretty area of New York? Was that it? Because they're obviously, I would assume, still having an affair after that. She got a scarf, you know? Like,
yeah, oh, yeah, 100%. And that's the thing, too, to interrupt you on purpose. Willis, you want to talk about her? The also stupid scene that didn't be there at all is when, like, she's laying on the bed in her panties and says, "If you come in, you got to close the door." Like, we know what they're doing. I just stupid shit, Eric.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of, and these feel like they weren't, they were just like the simple decisions, you know, that these weren't like, this maybe could have been done. This wasn't on script, but this just was a choice that was just like, yeah, we got to wrap this up today by 3 o'clock kind of thing, you know, right. or, oh, we don't have that in the budget. Let's just do this instead type of thing. These felt like kind of problem solving directions.
Right. But then we also, like you said, George comes back sock and wet, and he sees Karen, Justine, and she's like, "Hey, why are you soaking wet?" and all that stuff. And then after that, he decides to run her off the road.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
And conveniently, what happens to her? Jordan, you want to tell me?
She's in a coma.
Dun, dun, dun. Next time on All My Children.
Oh my God! And the funny thing is that they didn't have the money for the action scene, so the camera doesn't pan all the way for the car, so you can see the accent of her getting into a coma. You just that's absolutely amazing, right? Crazy.
Again, I feel like again a budget kind of decision right there. It's like, oh no, we gotta this car is a rental. We gotta get it back tomorrow. Let's just have her run off the road. Not hit anything. We'll just show her not on the road for a split second, and people will assume that she got into a car accident by the next scene.
Somehow has a coma. Like we don't. I mean, all we
neck see, brace, yeah, stitches, yeah. Blood, black eyes, in a coma.
Did she hit a tree? Did she hit a stump? Did she hit a cow? What did she hit? We don't know because the camera doesn't show us. So now we got George's cousin dead and stealing his identity. That is alleged at this point, or we know for 100% fact. Then he goes on a boat trip with Floyd, kills him, he's sopping wet. Now he runs Justine over, so he's like, hey, guess what? Guess what's going to happen? Catherine is leaving with Franny, and George is like, no, you ain't going to do that. And he gives her a sedative and her drink. Hey, you and I are fighting right now, wife. But here's a drink. Women or men, don't do that. And, you know, she tries to go. He's like, no, fuck you, whatever, leave, whatever. And then she starts to get unconscious. And then the scene of the movie where I stood up at this point, almost 7 o'clock in the morning today, and put my hands over my head and did laps in the garage because I was frustrated while it was happening, Eric, is she is drugged, and she's trying to get Franny. While she's trying to get Franny, the ghost of Ella appears and is directing her and saying things like, you know, us women are got to be strong or what, just this nonsense.
Ah, don't you pull it that way, Jordan.
It is, because that's what she does.
It's not. She was saying it was something. It was something. Don't you pull it that way. It's not a sex thing.
It's not okay, fine. But it's not that's not what I was frustrated about. It was just really the spirit is directing her and guiding her while she's like been fucking drugged. Like, come yeah. on. And then the shot and the special effects of her. It was just a woman in a blue dress with like this blue light over her. Like, it was worse than Obi-Wan Kenobi looked like in Empire Strikes Back as the Force Ghost. Like, it looks terrible. And then she passes out on the bed.
Yeah, I was confused at the part when they put the filter. I know, not the filter part, but yeah, that little filter where she's drugged. Which, again, that was an easy call because it was a callback to the previous murder that had happened. So obviously the evil ghost, the man who had killed the wife before, was whispering into George's ear. Obviously full evil now. He's transformed now after killing Floyd and injuring or possibly killing Justine. And he is just full corrupt and into the dark side now. And he's just taking whispers from now the evil ghost that's telling him more and giving him direction of what to do. He, kind of like a shining moment, like you said, he gets some sleeping pills under the false pretense that it's for his daughter's night terrors. And that was a pretty easy call. When that happened, he's like, oh, he's just going to drug his family and try to kill him. That's easy. But the kill scene where he kills his wife, Catherine, and she passed out on the bed, and that moment when she, like, turns into the wife before, the ghost. Oh, right. Yeah, it just seems like, well, that doesn't make sense because she died because of the trucks. She died not from an axe fight and not from being, you know, hit like that. So that was just kind of a weird thing. I don't understand why they showed that. And why she had said something like, oh, I'll give my body to protect you. Just like, okay, well, that didn't do dick, did it?
No, it did absolutely fucking nothing. I was completely shocked that he killed her because that does not happen in these kind of movies.
You're right. I was completely shocked that he killed her too, because if this guy was smart, he was fine already with the Floyd and Justine thing. But again, Justine, DeTrusso set you free and she got out of it. Probably because Catherine's ghost and the other ghost came to her in her coma. And she's like, okay, woman, you got to snap out of it and you know, solve this mystery for us type of thing. Get the evil what it's coming to him, and the good guys need to get a win out of this one too, which was silly. But like, George essentially has committed again. This is his serial rampage now. He went from killing his boss, potentially killing his buddy's wife / colleague, to now killing his wife
with an axe in the stomach. Like, and that was a brutal kill.
And reports it to the townie cop, who again was at a party with all of these people, knows mm-hmm. them, all of these people. They were there. It's a small town. Because, oh, if we're gonna invite your workers and stuff, then we'll invite the neighborhood too. So this police officer, I'm sure they don't have just all these murders coming in on a daily basis. So when someone of esteem, who was such rank, dies in a boating accident, that probably would set off something. And then the car accident, I guess that would happen too. But like, weird events are happening, and then a wife gets axe murdered in a house with history in it like this, where you know, obviously you know, because your wife told that guy too, exactly. And like, why wouldn't you think, and he's like, oh, I can't print it on him, so I'll just let him go, mm-hmm. just mosey on out, and just like, what the fuck? Like,
well, I guess
it's 1980 and shit like that. But here's another bullshit thing too, is that Travis, the town cop, his wife was even just like, oh, did you check for fingerprints? And he's like, oh, his fingerprints are all over the house type of thing. But you know who else is on that is the boys. I get that. It's like, okay, then you should hold both of them over, shouldn't you? You have mm-hmm. two sets of fingerprints on the fucking murder weapon. You should be arresting both of them.
Absolutely. No, like, I mean, just the police procedure on this was absolutely crazy. And I love how he kills her and he leaves a little note right there for Cole, right? I believe Cole, the younger one. And his little note with some money, and he's just like, hey, don't go upstairs. She's sick. I don't know that she's bleeding everywhere in bed, dead. And it's like, and also he says, hey, give Fanny her milk. And then once she's fast asleep, you can leave. I think he drugged Fanny too.
Yeah, I believe that he drugged Fanny as well. Probably so she wouldn't go upstairs to find her mom.
Right. So, I mean, he has a great alibi at this moment in time. Everybody at the college saw him. He was there the whole time. So, yep. Great alibi. But, you know, now we get to the point of the movie where I'm sure you don't remember, but you will as soon as I bring it up. This is what I'm deeming the house that Jack built ending.
Okay.
Do you remember that movie? We reviewed it.
I do. I can't not remember that movie, Jordan.
You remember how it goes from this weird movie to somehow Dante's Inferno, and you go, what the actual fucking fuck is this?
Yes.
That's this movie. Because what happens is George and Franny go back to his parents' house in Connecticut, and then Catherine's soul joins forces. That's what the plot says right here. Catherine's soul joins forces with Ella. They awaken Karen, show her everything that George did. Justine speaks to the police. George tries to escape in his descendant on his dead cousin's boat. A storm arrives, and then a hole opens up in the ocean, swallowing George as it replicates the painting seen throughout the whole fucking film.
Yeah, kind of in an opposite tone as well.
Isn't that stupid?
Yeah, it just seemed kind of weird and unnecessary, didn't it?
Seriously? It was stupid.
Well, it tried to wrap it up, and it was just like, why? Like, what are you doing?
Very stupid, Eric. I was so upset about the Excel. I was like, he's going to go on the boat for a little bit. And according to this plot, he says he tries to escape. So he wasn't going out there to kill himself. He was going out there to try to escape. Where?
Yeah, I didn't even know why he was going on there. Because I thought at first, like, that he was going out there to probably just Dexter it and try to kill himself, you know? Just right into the storm.
That's what I'm thinking. Because Justine called his parents' house and said, hey, I know what you did last summer kind of thing. Yeah. And he's just like, I gotta get on a boat. And it's just like, wow. That right there determined my popcorn rating for this movie. That stupid ending where it bleeds into the painting. And I'm just like, oh my God.
Well, with that, you want to get into it, Jordan?
Yes, let's get into it. Eric, what is your popcorn rating for Things Heard and Seen?
Listen, this movie caught me by surprise. I'm going to repeat myself on this again. And again, it had some ups and downs. But because of that, I actually did not mind most of this movie. A lot of people are really dog shitting on this movie. I get it. It's got, like, as I'm looking at it now, a 5.3 on IMDb. It's got a 38% of Rotten Tomatoes. It's people are really hating on this movie. And I'm telling you guys, I have seen a lot worse. Mm-hmm. I have seen a lot worse in this movie. Army of the Dead, I think, is worse than this movie.
I would agree.
And again, there were some shining moments, albeit few. For this movie, I don't think it deserved like that horrible dog shit. Am I gonna recommend it? I don't know. It's one of those where if you were like me and didn't know anything about it, then maybe you'd be in the benefit of it, you know. But at the same part, like if you just want like maybe something to watch, then maybe this might be for it, you know. But it's not gonna win any awards. It's not gonna make any lists. It's just kind of a standard movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I want to give it like a small bag. I guess I'll just give it a small bag because I don't think I'm going to be watching this movie again. I was teetering on giving it a medium just because of how off guard it caught me. But is that enough to warrant a medium bag? Probably not because it's not going to work again. The flavor's gone, you know, after seeing it. But I did enjoy this movie for the most part. I wasn't watching it in disgust like Army of the Dead where I'm just like writing down all the things wrong with the plot. I understood kind of what they were trying to go for in this movie, this theme of the art, but we addressed it before about how this movie is two separate movies into one. It's 2 hours long. It's 2 one-hour movies. That's what this is. And I think that if they would have made some better decisions with maybe the directing, the budget, a lot of parts of the story, actually, I would have liked to known a lot more about that ring.
With nothing.
Yeah, we got nothing on that ring. I think that was kind of silly. Or the wardrobe. I would have liked to have known a little bit more about that. I think if they would have touched on, we didn't talk about too much about the bulimia. It was really only used as an excuse in this movie to either get up for her, I don't know, her sightings, I guess, her episodes, if you want to call them that. Right. And then to have the drugging at the end, I mean, to foot that in. But again, you could incorporate that drugging into anything. It doesn't need to be a protein drink.
Right.
That because of her bulimia. I didn't really like that part of it, too. It just seemed that you could have done more or made better decisions in this movie to make it a much better movie. But I don't know if that's because of inexperience. I don't want to say insult the directors like that because, again, I think that for what they had, it wasn't too bad. But a lot of these, it just felt like something was wrong behind the camera. It really feels that way. I don't know if there was something with the studio, with the directors. There are two directors in this movie, and they both, one's a three-namer.
Yeah, they're husband and wife duo.
Okay, so maybe there was some conflict there. Maybe there was some conflict with the studio. There's a bunch of writers. They are the writers, and then they're mixing in with the... Yeah, well, it just seemed like there was a mix-up somewhere in this. It's really what it is, and that's why it's getting a small bag, because I feel like it's missed potential.
Okay, I mean, I'm going to go with a small bag as well. I cannot give it a no bag because, Eric, you're right. You took the words right out of my mouth. We have seen worse, and on my personal life, I have seen worse. So it's just why is the biggest question, why this gets a small bag. It's just, what is the point? Why are you doing this? Why are you giving me a ghost film? And then why are you giving me a husband go psycho film? This is not done well, and it frustrates me because a lot of choices that they make the characters do. Oh, I see a hot girl, so I'm just going to have an affair. Like, there's no rhyme or reason. We don't see a struggle with him on dealing with his attraction for this other woman. We don't see any of that stuff. Before the affair started, we thought that him and his wife were perfectly happy, from what I could tell at that point, because that affair starts very early on. So it's just a lot of nonsense. This is what I was frustrated with. It deserves a small bag. Not great. But, you know, if you want something that is a good movie to watch with your girlfriend or husband or wife, and then you get bored halfway through, that's the movie for you. I mean, that's what this is. So,
it was a fine one-time watch.
Absolutely.
You know?
One-time watch. Never going to see it again.
Exactly.
Absolutely. 100% agree. Well, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this most recent episode of Movie Guys Podcast. Like always, check us out on Twitter at Movie Guys Pod. Check us out on all the social media platforms, and also go to movieguyspodcast.podbean.com to download this episode and many others. And check out any other platform that you get your podcast at. We are on. We'll be back next week for another awesome episode. Eric, have a good night.